Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a special edition, and I do mean special edition, of the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka, and I'd like to thank you for joining me today. If this is the first time you've heard my show, let me briefly tell you what this show is all about. I believe that conversations plus connections equals community. People define community in many different ways. For me, it means enjoying something we have in common. Maybe it's where you live, maybe it's what you do, but one thing I can assure you, everyone has a story to tell, and what's your story is what this show is all about. And my guest today is my friend and buddy, David Constantino, and he's going to be sharing his story with you today. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi, Marcia. How you doing?
I'm doing just great. And, you know, there's always a story, right, David? And really, I'm going to give you an opportunity to share your story. But you and I, we have a story, and I'd like to tell the people that are listening how we met. And we'll see if we remember it the same way. It was October of 2011, I was visiting at my friend's inn, and you were staying there as well, as I came to find out. And I walked my first and only half marathon in Bristol, New Hampshire, while you were running the full marathon. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. But it was kind of a wet day. And I didn't even train for this. I had no idea what I was in for. And I wasn't properly prepared, particularly my socks and shoes. And so it took me 4 hours, folks. It took me 4 hours. I was the last one to cross the line doing a half marathon. And I developed this awful blister on my toe. And I could barely walk. The next morning, there you are sitting having breakfast, and I'm looking at you thinking, oh, this guy is lean, he's trim. I bet he ran the marathon. He's going to know what I should do. So I just went up to you, right, whipped my shoe off and stuck my foot in your face and said, what do I do about this? Is that how you remember it? It was funny.
Yeah, it's funny.
And you said to me, you told me, this has to be Lance. You cannot walk on this big water bubble.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, all right. So I had it Lance, my friend Lance, the blister, put a bunch. He said, make sure you medicate it properly, you wrap it properly, blah, blah, blah. And then we just started talking. And the next thing I know, I mean, this was 6.5 years ago. You said, we should be Facebook friends. And I thought, all right. And that's how it started, right?
Yes, that's how it started. It was a tough day. That was a very tough day. I remember it, And, you know, it's funny because my wife, Patricia, was also running the marathon that year, too. So it's funny
but
that we never made
it.
The connection. No, I didn't know her, and we never made that connection. And I actually found the pictures. Yeah, I remember that. Actually, I did really well. I ran. I was third overall in that race. I was really surprised, despite the conditions. Yeah.
I thought it would be great for you because obviously people are going to hear your accent. I thought you could just spend a little bit of time in this beginning part of the show, Dave, telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you call home, where you went to school. Tell us a little bit about you.
Okay. I grew up in Cumberland, Rhode Island. Both my parents are Portuguese immigrants. They first came to this country in 1968. I'm first generation. I have two sisters, Diane and Lisa, and I pretty much grew up in Cumberland, Rhode Island, went to Cumberland High School, graduated in 1988, and went off to college. So I grew up most of my life there, and I'm from a big family. Oh, my God, my grandmother, my surviving grandmother of 89, had 14 children. My deceased other grandmother had 8. So the family pretty much exploded. So there's a lot of siblings, a lot of third, fourth cousins, and scattered all over the world. Both my mom and dad are still alive. They're well.
Good. Did you finish college? Because I really don't know that part about your life story. Where did you go to? Where'd you go?
I went to a number of schools. I went to and graduated a number of schools. I studied architectural drafting. Went to New England Institute of Technology. I studied art and architecture at Roger Williams University, Community College of Rhode Island, and I studied art education in RIT, and I graduated in, but I didn't.
Whenever.
But then I wanted to do something different in my life. I ended up going into the service at 29. I joined the Rhode Island Army National Guard in 89. Because my Uncle John, he's retired, he's 33 years, retired as a lieutenant colonel, and encouraged me to go in the Guard to do something different. And that's where the running actually began. And, that's where the running began. I had to prepare myself to do a required 2-mile run before I went off boot camp. And so that's the service really kind of disciplined me, you know, with the training and everything, with what I'm doing now. So that really was a huge important factor in my life, to doing all the marathons and the training I do.
You know, David, I just remembered something about what I remember about you and I. I had forgotten that you were in the National Guard. I remember speaking to you regarding that because my father retired from the National Guard. A lot of people have, you know, that wasn't his full-time occupation. He worked, but every summer he did 2 weeks of summer camp, and he was in the National Guard when he was in the war in World War II. And I had forgotten that you two were in the National Guard. How long did you serve?
I did 3 years in the Rhode Island Army National Guard. I was assigned to a National Guard unit called the 861st Engineer Company. I went to engineering school at Fort Leonard, Missouri. That's where I got my training, my boot camp, and my AIT. I spent a good 6-7 months out there for training, and I came back and I did my assignments. And then after 9/11, I reenlisted in the reserves and did another 3 years. And then I finished. I did my time. I decided that I wanted to move on. And so I've served a total of 6 years.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your service, because I don't think military is thanked as often as they should be. So thank you for what you did, David. I think it's commendable. Yeah. But I noticed that what you had said was that's when your love of running began. So when did you actually run your very first marathon? When was that?
That was in 2002. I ran my first marathon in my home state, Rhode Island. It was called the Ocean State Marathon, I didn't know what a marathon was. I didn't really train much. I wasn't, I think the furthest I ever ran to prepare for the race was probably only 17 miles. It's so crazy because I was doing triathlons before I got into marathons the previous year, 2001. And then I was so inspired watching the Boston Marathon. I said, you know what? I think I can do that. So I actually did.
Wow.
2002, I finished with a time of 3 hours 40 minutes 26 seconds, which is considered a respectable time. So, but then I just got hooked and I just... Then I did it again the following year.
You know, for those people that are not familiar with the marathon, because honestly, I wasn't. When I did that half marathon, I was, I don't want to say I was cavalier, but I was uninformed, and I was saying to these total strangers that said, oh, you should do this. You, if you walk, you can do this. And I said, well, you know, about how long is that? About 12 miles? They certainly corrected me. So I know how long a half is. Would you like to tell everybody what a full marathon is? How long is a full marathon?
Well, today it's 26.2 miles.
Right.
Yeah, originally, actually, if you know, if you want the history, the marathon actually came from ancient Greece. Actually, the first person to run a marathon was a Greek soldier. Was at the Battle of Marathon, and that was at 4 BC. And he ran a total distance, was about 25 miles, to announce that, you know, the Greeks had defeated the Persians at the town of Marathon, and he actually died. He actually dropped dead after he announced it. So that's where, you know, the history, if you want to go back further. But then, you know, if you want to get into nowadays, like I think it was in 1896, something, the Olympic Marathon, I think it was the first Olympic Marathon. I think the distance was like 24, 25. I think when it came, the 26.2 miles came about, was, I think it was in the London Marathon. I think I got the year, I think it was in 19-something. The royal family, I think it was Queen Alexandria, wanted it to finish in front of Windsor Castle at the Royal Box at the Olympic Stadium. So that's when they extended the, you know, the 26, it was the 385 yards, they extended that so to accommodate the finish line so the Queen can see the, you know, the marathoners finish.
Interesting. I didn't know that story. That's very interesting. Yeah. When you said you had this love of running, and you ran that first marathon in 2002 to Rhode Island, did you already have your eye on, listen, this is really cool, and I can do this, and you know your time was really good. Was it your intention to have the goal to run Boston? Was that something that you had your eye on?
Yeah, actually, yes, because I, you know, after, like I said before, I, you know, after watching, you know, my folks and I would watch the marathon on TV, the Boston Marathon, and I said, you know what, I want to try for that, and it actually took me three times. I did the Ocean State Marathon twice. Didn't get the qualifying time, which was at the time was 3:10. I had to run a 3:10 marathon, but that actually became a reality when I ran the Hartford, Connecticut Marathon in 2004, and I ended up running at 3:09, which got me right into the first Boston in 2005.
Wow. That's really cool. And, you know, just to backtrack slightly, I had the incredible experience and pleasure of being in Greece and hearing that story that you've just told about the marathon and him dying and him wanting to get, they didn't use the pigeons to get the information across. They had somebody running to share this information. And while I've never been a runner, I'm sort of a jogger perhaps, maybe that's maybe an exaggeration. I was on the track in Athens, on that actual track where people were competing. That was really emotional to experience that. And I would imagine if you were there, you would have that same sort of chills that go over your body as you run through that tunnel and onto the track. It was pretty remarkable. When you ran your marathon in 2005, and I know we're going back, we're talking, you know, you've done, was it 2005 when you did your first? Okay,
yeah,
so,
Boston.
Wow. So do you remember what your time was when you ran that first marathon?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Where was it?
with all my certificates. It was 3 hours and 34 minutes and 33 seconds. That was my first Boston time.
Wow. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
What makes, I mean, there's marathons all over the world. What makes the Boston Marathon so special to you?
Oh, God. Well, it has a history. It's considered the grandfather of all marathons. I mean,
okay.
I think the first Boston Marathon was ran in 1897, if I'm correct.
Wow.
It was a, yeah, and, but at the time, it was only 24.5 miles of course, and that changed later on after the, I think it was the 1896 Olympics, and I think it was in Athens, something, I can't remember, that's when they changed the distance, but it has a history, a lot of famous people, John Kelly was the one of the runners that you know, he's very famous. He won the first Boston, and I wasn't sure if it was the first Boston, but he's one of the first Bostons. And there's quite a few other runners I can't think of.
But it,
hey, Marsh.
You
know, yes, but Trish, I'm just jump in for a sec.
Please, thank you, Trisha. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
What did you want to add?
I just wanted to add for those of us that run marathons or runners in general, there are six world majors, and they are Boston, New York, Chicago, London, Berlin, and Tokyo. And
wow.
For runners, those are bucket list items, and to get into any of those races is a tremendous accomplishment for anyone who's a runner. And a lot of people actually try and do all of those six majors. It obviously is quite an investment of time and money to do that, but Boston being the oldest of all the marathons is kind of considered the holy grail of those six.
Wow. Well, you know what? I'm just so delighted you picked up the phone, and I know we may move around in this order of questions, but since you're there, you've also, how many Boston marathons have you run?
So I've run 3 Bostons and 14 total, so nothing like David, but I've been running probably for longer than my husband.
Oh, gosh. I love that. I love that you've jumped in, and I also love that information that you shared. And I'm going to we can tag team from this point forward. You guys can, you're welcome to just intersect at any time you'd like. But here is the next question that I found so fascinating, and that is the Boston Marathon always run on a Monday?
It is Patriots Day.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, 1897 to 1968, the Boston Marathon was held on Patriots Day, which is April 19th, and the holiday commemorates the start of the Revolutionary War, and it's only recognized in Massachusetts and Maine. It was
Got
in 1969 that the holiday was officially moved to the third Monday in April. So it's kind of a
weird day to have it, but here in Massachusetts, it's school vacation week. So for local people, it provides a tremendous amount of spectators.
Because
most marathons are run on Sundays.
You know what? That's interesting because the public school kids are off this week. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
But were they just off like 2 weeks ago for spring break or Easter vacation or whatever it's called back there as well?
Sometimes they overlap on where Easter falls. Yeah, but no, in Massachusetts, they, I believe, Good Friday and Yeah, Good Friday is the only day off. So if that happens to fall before Patriots Day, then yeah, they coincide. But that did not happen this year.
Oh, that's see what you learn when you're talking to people on another side of the map. So, David, you to know what is the symbol? Why is the unicorn the symbol for the Boston Marathon?
You know, that's a really good question, Marcia, because even the race director has no idea. But some people said that it came from a family crescent. I think the first organizer, I think that did the Boston, had a family crescent of the unicorn. And they actually liked the idea because of its, you know, mythological symbolism, the unicorn, what it represents. So they actually used it. I mean, that's from what I heard, but they don't really know the real reason for it. But
That's interesting. That really is interesting. And, you know, because you and I do know each other, and I don't always have guests that I know personally. Sometimes, you know, my guests come in a variety of different ways to me. But because we were and are, continue, the three of us to be Facebook friends, you know that I'm a bird brain, and you know that I love birds. And you're an artist, and you're a really good artist. In fact, there's a picture of the unicorn that you drew from that symbol. It's lovely, but you had drawn a picture of a bluebird. And I thought, need to have that. I need that. I'm going to pay David. I'm going to have that. So I sent you an email or whatever, and I said, I need to have that. He says, oh, it's yours. You just need to give me the address, and no, you may not pay me for it, and I'm going to just send it to you. And it came framed and beautiful, and I hung my half marathon ribbon around it with my little medallion, and you were at my house. You were both at my house last month, so you know that it's sitting there, and it has a very special place for me because you are a really good artist. But I was going to ask you, so I know you drew with the unicorn, but there are some things about the Boston Marathon that was just yesterday. I can't believe you guys are talking to me right now. But we're going to talk about the weather at some point. But I'd like to know, how did Heartbreak Hill actually get its name? What's the background on that?
Okay, so from what I understand, the true story of Heartbreak Hill comes from in 1936, what I mentioned earlier, John Kelly, he was defending his first Boston Marathon victory the previous year. He was going up against another marathon runner named Tarzan Brown. His real name was Alisson Brown. And basically, it was after the first three Newton Hills. John Kelly thought he had it, you know, that he was going to beat him. But Tarzan, the funny thing is that he kind of padded, before they got to Newton, he padded Tarzan on the back saying, oh, you did a nice job. And so what happened is after the third hill, Tarzan came right behind him, and believe it or not, he passed Kelly, and he ended up winning him. So that broke John Kelly's heart. So that's where the Heartbreak Hill. And it's funny because at the actual place where that happened, there's a monument of John Kelly when he was young and older, commemorating that actual fight right there, which is, I think, 20 miles. Was it, 20 miles, yeah. Where Tarzan passed John Kelly. So
That's a great story. I mean, that kind of gave me goosebumps, you know? You have so many stories, and that's the whole point of doing a radio show, just so you know. Because women weren't running in the early days of the marathon. When did women finally start running in the Boston Marathon?
It wasn't until 1967. I think Trisha's going to have to help me with this. I think that was
the year 50 years.
The Boston Marathon allowed that I think it was before that, was Captain Switzer. Switzer was the first woman, but she didn't.
So she wasn't. So Catherine Switzer, who is a legend here in Boston, he entered the race, sort of covered herself up to be not recognizable as a woman, and jumped in the. Yeah, she jumped in the race, and she actually got some heckling, like severe heckling. And
I think it was the official.
One of the officials tried to pull her.
And Catherine Switzer, I think it was her husband, pushed the guy out, and they continued the race.
So she finished that race, but unofficially. So the first woman who actually officially finished the race was Bobby Gibbs.
Bobby Gibbs.
And I'm not sure of that year, but I want to say it was around 1970, 1971. And Catherine Switzer did come back in 1972 to officially run the Boston Marathon. And I think she might have even won that year. I think she may have even won that year, Marsha.
Interesting.
So she's a local legend.
Oh, I bet. Well, something pretty remarkable, speaking of legendary things, something pretty darn remarkable happened yesterday for women, right?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So Desiree Linden is, she's they call her a blue-collar runner. And basically
it basically means that she
doesn't have all of the official training. Like a lot of these runners are bred in college and come up under some of the most well-known coaches. And Desiree was kind of a late bloomer. And she just, for lack of a better word, she just looks like a normal person. You know, she's a lot of the runners that you see are very, very thin. And she's just, she's unbelievable. But in 2011, she came in second place at the Boston Marathon. She lost by 2 seconds.
Oh, my God.
It was a killer, and she was madly disappointed and knew that what she was missing was a final kick. So the final part of the marathon down Boylston Street is one-third of a mile, which is about four blocks. And she just wasn't able to keep that final kick. So anyway, she was very disappointed, but she was so impressive. She was so impressive to us. We knew we hadn't seen the last of her. So to watch her yesterday and her strategy and how she just overtook everyone, she owned it by 4 minutes by the time she got to the finish line. You know,
it didn't surprise us because we had a feeling that she was going to pull it off because of two things. She has trained on that course before, and she's trained in New England. She's trained in all kinds of weather. So she had that in her back. I mean, we had a feeling that she was going to pull it off, and we were just so happy about it.
But most importantly, Marsha, it is the first time in 33 years.
I mean, that gives me goosebumps too. I mean, I wrote down her time for those of you that may not have seen it. So she ran this 26.2 miles in 2 hours, 39 minutes, and 54 seconds. That's really remarkable. That's pretty remarkable.
So for the record, that is 14 minutes slower than the women elite usually run because of the conditions.
Because of the conditions,
And
same and
thing
I thought with
the we
men.
Could talk. What was the man? What the winner of the men's race? What was his time? I think that's in the paper, but I don't. Let me see if I can see it. 2 minutes 15. Two hours 15 minutes 58 seconds.
So
is that
that's
what
about
it was
7 minutes. That's about 7 minutes slower.
Well,
yes.
And that's,
you know what it said, Dave, in the paper? It said that it was the slowest race since 1976. So let's talk about the weather. You know, that you ran it. We're going to talk about Flip, what were the weather conditions when you started the race?
Oh, God. It was 38 degrees. It was torrential downpours with probably 35, 40 mile per hour winds. And
the worst part
of it is we were heading into the wind. So when you have torrential downpour, when it's raining really hard and you have a wind, a 40 mile hour wind, it feels like someone was shooting pellets in your skin. That's how bad it was. And then being cold, like not even 40s. I mean, it's just, you know, I couldn't even feel my hands and my feet. That's how bad it got. And I wasn't even halfway through the course. And from what Patricia told me, that a friend of ours, he said that it was the highest percentage of non-finishers in this race compared to the 2012, which was the heat wave. I think it was 40,000 runners didn't make it through it, but this year a lot more runners didn't finish the course, unfortunately, because of the weather. It was really bad.
It was brutal. I'm calling from Los Angeles. We had some winds here, and I walk in the morning at 6 a.m., and it's, you know, in the 50s, and I'm bundled up the way you guys are bundled up in the 30s because we're freezing in that weather. I cannot even fathom wet rain, and if the wind was if it was guiding you, lovely. You'd have the wind beneath your wings like that song goes. Really, you would have not worried about the rain, but oh my gosh! Yeah. So I got to know, because I am curious, Dave. How did you finish? What was your time at the end of the race? Because you did finish.
Well,
good for you.
It wasn't my best time. It was probably my worst time. It was 3 hours and 47 minutes and 59 seconds. You know, I knew the conditions were going to affect me. Plus, I came off of 2 degrees. I had rolled my ankle back in January, and then I had some tendonitis, which actually affected me in the entire race in my right leg. So that and the condition, that played a factor in it. But all I really cared was I knew that was going to be an issue. I just wanted to finish the race and secure my 14th consecutive Boston Marathon on my belt. And so I just kept running, you know, and I just didn't want to stop, you know.
You know what? If I had an applaud meter in the background, I'd be pushing that button right now that would have this applaud sounding. So let me just do this. Okay. That's the best I can do for applauding. Let me just say to you, I know that you've been injured, and I know what it takes what you've been doing, because we're friends, and I follow that. And just the fact of all of these injuries and your fortitude is just incredible. And your stick-to-itiveness and your determination, Dave. I don't know how many of your friends will come back and listen to this show, whether they will or they won't. But I know that, you know, you've got a YMCA group that you were very active involved with. Patricia's a runner. And I just think it's sensational what you did. And congratulations
Thank you.
3 hours and 47 minutes. Do you know how far you can get beyond San Diego in that time in Los Angeles? I can't imagine running like that. I just can't. Whew. Speaking of Boston, and we just can't avoid this. It's too important. You were running the marathon in 2013.
Yeah.
And I remember that day so vividly from this side of the coast, because we're on a 3 hour time difference. And I heard about this after everything had happened, because it's much earlier where you are. Can you take us, if you don't mind, can you take us back to those moments? Where were you when that bomb went off, David?
Well, believe it or not, 2013 was actually my PR. I ran a 3:02 marathon that day. I had a couple friends from Rhode Island.
PR meaning best race? What is? Wait, I don't mean to interrupt you. What is a PR?
Personal record. PR, personal record.
Got it. I'm so sorry. All right, so again, I won't interrupt now. Go ahead.
And so that was one of my best years. And I had waited for my friend Bob Lux. He was 15 minutes behind me. He came in and we walked back to the buses to get our gear. And at that time, I was in the process of getting on the BA bus to head back to Hopkinton, the starting line, which at that time, that's what they were doing. They were, they allowed to bring runners back to the starting line. That bus was not supposed to leave until 4 o'clock. I got on the bus at 2 o'clock, and there was a couple runners there. It was half full. And next thing you know, the bus driver got on the bus, started it up, and we were on Mass Pike heading back to Hopkinton. And it's when I just got off the bus is when the bombs went off. That's when I got my first phone call. And they told me the bombs went off at the finish line. I said, "What do you mean?" And it's just like it didn't become surreal until I saw the pictures on TV, the news. My second phone call was my friend Thomas, who was a vet, 25-year veteran at police chief in Rhode Island. He also ran a SWAT team. He ran Boston with me 2 years in a row in the early years. I think it was 2006 and 2007. And he told me his words. It did not surprise him that happened, because when he ran the first year with me, he didn't realize how wide open the course was, how limited security was. It's almost like someone could just jump in, and people have jumped in on the race as a bandit. He was like, "David, I can't believe that there's community security on here. Something could happen." And he just told me, like, "I'm glad you're safe and everything and stuff, but oh my God, I just can't believe that happened." And but ever since then, BAA tighten it up. Now we have a lot of security. We even have the National Guard, some of the troops there along the course to protect the runners, and not just the spectators, but the runners now.
I just want to ask one question. So, because I'm not familiar with the area, so just to understand, was that bus that you got on at 2 o'clock, was that in the location where that bomb went off that bus shouldn't have left then? Is that what I'm understanding you to say?
That was 2 blocks from the blast, believe it or not.
Two blocks. Okay. All right.
2 blocks.
Trish, you were also there, weren't you?
So I was volunteering at Mile 15, which is one of our Colonial Roadrunner water stops. So, it was a beautiful day. That day happened to be perfect weather. We were just enjoying the day. And, the way the water stops work are you have to break down the tables at a certain hour. The towns, whatever town you're in, requires a certain time to be broken down so they can reopen the roads. So they had done that, and it's 3 o'clock that you have to be done. So I was with 4 girlfriends. We had carpooled up there, and we were on our way home. So we were on the highway heading home, and one of the girls' husband rang in and told us what happened, and we immediately put on the radio, and that's where we heard what was going on. But it was
wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It was
hard to fathom.
Mm-hmm. A lot of trying to track down our runners, and the cell phone service became unavailable. It was a tough day.
They shut the city down. In fact, I think the governor declared martial law because they were looking for the suspects. So the city shut down everything. The airport, everything was shut down.
How has this inspired you, David? How is this, and you too, Tricia, how have you been, has this given you even more inspiration from wanting to run? Because I remember when you ran the very next year. Has this really inspired you even more?
So that's funny. I just said to David, can I take this one?
Go ahead.
So,
take it, Trish.
So 2014, we both ran, and I'm not fast enough to qualify, but I was the treasurer of my running club, and I was granted a waiver. There were so many people who wanted to run that race. It was unprecedented. They did let, I think, another 5,000 people in.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, it's a tight course, meaning the streets are narrow, so there's really not that many, you know, it's not like New York City, and you can't really let that many more people in, but they did that year. And I remember just, you know, running that, and I was so attentive to everything that was going on with around the spectators, and it was humbling and beautiful and sad that we're watching SWAT teams on top of buildings and just the military on every single stretch of that course for 26.2 miles. You know, I felt privileged to be able to run that day. I felt honored. It was extremely emotional. I'm emotional right now even thinking about it.
Talking about it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's so emotional hearing it, and I wasn't there. Children died. I mean, people died. You know, it was pretty horrific. Dave, what was running through your mind? Because you and Tricia didn't know each other at this point. What was running through your mind when you were running that following 2014 marathon?
Well, I was really thinking about the victims and their families, and in particular that young boy, Martin Richards.
Right.
You know, and the funny part is that that year, the first American in I think since 1986, Meb, won. And in fact, this year he was running for a charity for the Martin Richards Foundation. He was running. He's actually within my way. I actually went over to shake his hand to say thank you, you know, and it's a privilege to be on the line with you. And it's just ever since then, I just keep thinking about what happened with the victims. Every time I pound the pavement, I'm running for them, you know. And
right.
And it's just, you know, and my heart's still with them. I haven't forgotten them. I'm always carrying them in my heart every time I'm out there running, training, whether I'm running Boston again or any marathon.
And Marcia, just like the significance of Boston, there were many, many victims who did not die but have been permanently affected by what happened that day and losing limbs. And you cannot imagine how many of those people have lined up in Hopkinton and run that race since that day. It's unbelievable.
You know, it is unbelievable. And the PTSD also, people that didn't maybe lose anything but were witness to what happened, is horrifying as well. You know, I want to spell your name, David, and I know it's your last name too, Trish. But if you go to David Constantino, and that's spelled Constantino, just like it sounds, Constantino.
Yes.
If you're on Facebook, you can just log on to see David and read his thoughts. Your thoughts, David, because I know you're a poet. Your thoughts, and Tricia, you too, and she's there as Patricia with the same last name. You guys write beautifully about what this means, and if somebody wants additional information about just what goes through a runner's mind, they just need to go and look at your post and read what it says, because it's tremendous. David, are you considered, because I don't know the definition, are you considered an elite runner? What's an elite runner? Maybe I don't know what that term means.
No, I wouldn't consider myself as an elite runner. When I think of an elite runner, I'm thinking about Olympic athletes. They're really running unbelievable times.
Okay.
I mean,
I think there are 100 people that are allowed to be elite every year in Boston,
okay.
And it's solely based on the time and, you know, that particular year, what their qualifying time was. For men, it's anywhere between 205 and 215.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, and
wow.
For women, it's about 220 to 235.
Wow. I can't imagine running that fast. So they're expected to win, right? I mean, your elite runners are not going to be beaten by somebody that's not an elite runner, I can't imagine, right?
No, but I think if David had the opportunity to line up with the elite, he would beat them in the first mile.
There you go. See, there you have it. I love that. Don't laugh. That's true. I bet you have met people. That's so funny. I bet you've met people from all over the world, haven't you, in running all these marathons?
Yeah, we sure have.
Yeah,
really,
I bet.
Great story.
Gosh, I just think it's so cool. And you know, I'm going to just tell you, I got this harebrained idea last night because I thought, gosh, you know what? I can do a radio show whenever I choose. It doesn't just have to be Mondays at 1 o'clock, which is when I do my show every single week. I'll do a show next Monday at 1 o'clock. But since this is now Blog Talk Radio and I have the privilege of doing my show, frankly, whenever I choose, I thought we were together last month and I was thinking, gosh, it would be so cool. By together, meaning you were here, I wasn't there. I think it would be so cool if maybe you'd consider doing a show with me, David. So I called you. You were exhausted.
Yeah.
And it's 3 hours later, and it's like, hey, you know what? I got this idea. Why don't we talk about the marathon tomorrow? You're not going to work. And maybe we can even convince your beautiful wife to join in. She's scared. It's like, way to just roll her in. But you know what? She and I understand each other. When I look into her eyes, I get her. So I understand her. And I just think it's so cool. And you've been married now. How long have you been married? I forget. Is it 3 years?
It'll be 3 years next month. Yep. May 15th.
Oh, my gosh. May 15th. That's just so awesome. And I think it's just so cool that you both enjoy running as much as you do. Now, David, you're crazy, okay? Just so we have that out there in the public. Because nobody does what you do. No, I mean nobody. Maybe somebody does. Maybe you're not by yourself. Because, Trish, I know that you're up and early and you're out there running, and I see you running, and you post, and then I follow you, and it's like, oh, my God, how cold is it? You got your hat on, and then maybe you have your Starbucks when it's afterwards because you guys have met for coffee. But you guys, David, okay, just briefly – because I'm gonna just shout you out. What time do you start working out normally in the morning? Go ahead, tell them.
Okay, I'll get up probably about 1:30, quarter to.
Now that's not to go to the bathroom, everybody. Let me just be clear about that. Okay, go on. And then what do you do?
So I start my day with a 10K, which is 6.2-mile run. Then I come home. Then I do some weight training for about 40, 45 minutes. I'll do 30-minute core, then 30 minutes on my stationary bike. Then I'll shower, get cleaned up, have breakfast, and then I'll lie on the bed of nails, which is an acupuncture mat for 30 minutes. And then I go off to work to the office at 6:30. So that's pretty much my week.
Okay, so let's see. We're approaching, let's see, what time is it at your house? It's 3 hours ahead, so it's about 10 minutes or 6. Is that what? Yeah, so it's almost bedtime. I want to appreciate you staying up late tonight with the big kid.
The rest of the week off. I'm not going to bed early like I normally do. Usually about 7:30.
Oh, my God. God, you don't even know what's on television. Okay, that's okay. I'm not going to get you up on it. Okay, now this beautiful wife of yours with this gorgeous smile, You don't get up that early. Tell me you don't get up that early, other than go to the bathroom.
I don't get up that early. people probably think, and that my training seems normal compared to David's. I have girlfriends who I run with, so it's part of my social life too. But we meet at 4:30, 4:30, 4:30, 5 in the morning, and we run for an hour and a half, and then I go to work.
Wow.
And then, so I do that twice, 3 days a week, and then I do boot camp twice a week.
That's so just remarkable.
I stay up till 9 o'clock, Marcia.
Oh, big girl. Okay.
I'm a big girl.
You don't even let the weather mess with you, do you? I mean, it's just, yeah. I mean, I suppose you don't probably run in the rain, do you? Or do you even run in the rain?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a rough year. We're pretty burnt out right now. But in general, the cold isn't as bad as the wet or the snow. Like, you can dress in layers, and it's not pleasant, but it's not terrible. When it's pouring rain, or for myself, like, I won't run if there's any slippery conditions. Because I have
that's crazy.
Same here.
So a lot of indoor running this year.
Sure. Well, because you have one nor'easter after another after another after another. You know, it is springtime. Nobody seems to understand that. Gosh.
We don't really understand it either.
No kidding. My God. So, you know, David, at the top of the show, you mentioned, or no, actually, Trish, it was you that mentioned this, these elite premier places all over the world where the marathons are run. So I'm just curious, you guys. So you've done Boston. Do you have a bucket list of some race that you just have never been that you want to go to?
I think we both would like to
Boston.
Do Chicago and
Chicago,
New York.
Chicago, New York,
I would love to do – so when we got married, we did a half marathon on our honeymoon in Ireland.
I remember that now.
We'd like to try and get some travel thrown into some cool places to run marathons, not necessarily those six majors, but there's marathons everywhere.
Yeah, I think that's really – The really interesting thing, when I did that walking half marathon in Bristol, New Hampshire, the people that I were with, there was a woman, bless her heart. I was the last walker through. And this woman was in her late 70s. She and her husband, he ran that marathon like you did, Dave. They have done marathons on every continent. It was raining. I didn't even have a slicker or anything. I borrowed somebody's jacket thing to put over my head because, like I said, I wasn't planning on doing this. And she stayed with me the whole time. She didn't let me give up. She said, you can do this. We can do this. I will stay with you. And the very next day, David, I don't know if you remember, there was another marathon up in, I think it might have been Rhode Island. And that gentleman, where was it that next day? Do you remember?
It was Maine. Yeah, it was.
But that
Maine.
Older
it
man,
was,
that
yeah.
older guy did it too. That older guy. Where,
yeah,
where was that? Was that in Rhode Island?
No, that was in Maine. It was called the Maine Marathon.
And so,
Maine,
did you do that too the very next day?
Oh no!
Oh, go ahead.
There's a group that tries to do 50 marathons in 50 states. They try to make some of them conducive so people can knock two off in a weekend, which is crazy.
Cool.
But
that is crazy.
If you're in New England, may as well do too, right?
Right. Well, hey, why not? You know what? I feel like when you're in New England, you're just supposed to look at the trees and drink beer. Everybody has to think. Just saying what I like, right? When you're not running and exercising, David, you are very talented. Even though you're a techie kind of guy, you've got that other side of your brain that does art and poetry, huh? You're a poet as well, aren't you?
Yes, I actually had one of my titled Poems, published in an anthology book called Eternity of Beauty. That was back in 1996. I was a student at Rajiv University, and I when I'm not training or anything, or even when I am training, I sometimes I'll break out the sketchbook and just, you know, draw, or if I'm out, you know, walking, or I'll just start reciting a poem in my head, and I'll just write it down, and when I get home, and it just randomly happened. I don't plan on it. Sometimes when I'm in the mood for it, like I'm feeling creative and I want to do something, so that's when I pull the sketchbook out and either draw or start writing.
I need to butt in here right now. Every episode of Born to Talk brings its own set of challenges from the technology side of life. And when I've had a show that's been scheduled for 1 hour and it goes beyond that 1 hour, it allows me to continue. Evidently, not today. So it appears that my episode has ended with you guys and that they're processing the audio right now. That breaks my heart, because I could have easily made this a 2-hour show, and I will learn from that. And so presuming that indeed this really has ended, which really saddens me greatly, because I am so grateful for you joining me and being a part of my show, I'm going to just presume that it's over and learn lesson number 2 this week. I'm going to pretend like it's still on and just thank you guys so much. You and Tricia, you added so much to the show, and this abruptness of just having it end like this does not please me. It's one more thing that I need to learn, but I can see right now that it says your episode is ending. We're processing the audio now. It will be available soon. And it's already talking about my show that's going to be on next week. So I'm very sorry. I don't know what to say.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for thinking,
Here's what I'd like to do. I'm going to presume that everything that's written in front of me is accurate. So I'm going to end the episode, even though the episode clearly looks like it's over. And then I'm going to just call you back for just a moment, if you don't mind, David, on your cell phone. Is that okay? I'm going to hang up this call and call you back. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you, Martha. Bye-bye.